Join us now for the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker is Dr. Brian Hand, professor of Bible at BJU. The title of his message is, Every Man is a Mime. The text is from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32 through chapter 5, verse 5.
Please join me in Ephesians chapter 4. We'll be looking at the end of the chapter and then carrying over into chapter 5 just a little bit. Whom are you most like? When you take the time to consciously think about it, whose character, whose actions, maybe even whose appearance do you most closely resemble? The scriptures address this topic repeatedly throughout the Bible, particularly in today's message. They give us both the theme and the title of this message, that every man is a mime. A mime is an imitator. Mime is a person who reflects the characteristics or traits of another person. And this passage addresses this very clearly. Let's begin our reading in verse 32 of Ephesians chapter 4. And be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love, as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints, neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. A few weeks ago, while my family was on vacation, we got up one morning, ate breakfast, and then pushed back from the table. And all of a sudden, we were amused to see my youngest child, Daniel, who's a one-year-old, throw up his hands very dramatically and open his mouth as widely as he could. First, we couldn't figure out what he was doing. Then we started laughing because we realized that just a couple seconds before that, I had stretched and yawned. And he thought it looked like a fun activity, so he decided he would do it as well. Little children are imitators. Just 2 days ago, while we were sitting in his room, he came up to me with a little toy object and started shaking it all over my arm. Then he grabbed a rag from off his shelf and started wiping my arm. Well, bath time had happened the night before, and he was precisely imitating the exact actions of putting soap on the arm and soaping and scrubbing down Daddy, as I had just done to him. He's an imitator. Why do people imitate? We find this persistent throughout all of humanity. People imitate people. We imitate, unfortunately sometimes, stars, movie stars, music stars. People imitate great financial leaders who have a seven-step program to financial independence and think that somehow if I just do what he has done or follow in that pattern, that somehow I will come to financial success. Funny, Microsoft Money hasn't put any articles about me on its website, but it persistently has articles about Warren Buffett. Anytime he starts buying a particular stock, they all go, oh, look, Warren Buffett's buying this stock. Maybe we all ought to sit up and take notice. And a lot of people do notice, start buying the same stock and drive it through the roof very quickly. They're imitators. Young men often imitate pastors or evangelists. Every fall, we have the opportunity as Bible and seminary faculty to judge the high school sermon contest here on campus. And it's interesting to me to note that among every six guys that you judge, at least one or two of them have a certain cadence to their speech or certain gestures or even certain tone of their voice that are clearly imitating a well-known evangelist. That they have looked at the individual, have charted in their minds what makes that evangelist effective, and then pattern their lives in the same fashion. The scripture verses before us today are very important in presenting an imitation that is much more significant than person-to-person imitation. The Bible passage in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32 and following directly states that you who are believers must imitate God. You must imitate God. And the passage begins by showing us you must imitate God for the right reason. Why do people imitate someone else? You imitate someone that you admire. You imitate someone that you are around a great deal. Or you imitate someone, you say, oh, I want to be exactly like that. He has fame. He has power. He has wealth. He has a great speaking ability. I want to be exactly like that. And so you pattern your lives after that individual. Imitation itself is not a pointless or purposeless activity. It has a reason or a goal or basis. So why would you want to imitate God? Why would you want to be like him? And in what manner can you be like him? The Bible passage again today shows us that we imitate God, first of all, most basically, because God is kindly disposed toward you. Why do we imitate him? Because God has an affectionate relationship with you if you're a believer. Look at the passage. The very first word of chapter 5, not in our English text, but in the Greek text, is therefore. Therefore, be imitators of God. Therefore, be imitators of God. And the term therefore is very important. The first clause or sentence that precedes the word therefore is the ground or reason for what follows it. We can illustrate this very simply. If I said to you, therefore, you must all exit by this front door after chapel. What question does that raise in your mind? He didn't give us the reason. Therefore, we must. Why? Who is he to say that we have to use this door instead of the back doors as well? We need the ground or the reason for the action. However, if I said, oh, early this morning, the Greenville Zoo lost one of its lions and it was roaming right outside the back doors. Therefore, you must exit out the front door when you leave chapel today. You go, oh, OK, now I see it. There's a reason for the action that follows. The passage then tells us, therefore, be imitators of God. Well, what was the basis that preceded it? Chapter 4, verse 32. And that verse shows us that God is kindly disposed toward you. Be ye kind. You be kind toward other people. You be tenderhearted, a term that is fundamentally a moving of the emotions toward another individual profoundly so that you can almost feel it physically when you sense this kind of compassion toward that individual. Tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. Why should you be imitators of God? Because God, through the forgiveness that is offered in Jesus Christ, shows his affection toward you. He is kind. He is tender. You know, we don't normally want to imitate the ogres of history past. We don't want to imitate people who are aggressive and hostile. You look at them and say, oh, we don't want to be like that. You want to imitate people who have demonstrated compassion and kindness toward you. We see that even with children. Children imitate their parents more often and more regularly, more naturally than they would imitate anyone else. Not only because of the contact that they have with each other, but also because a child knows mommy and daddy care for me. A number of years ago, my brother, Uncle Matt, to my children, was still in the area before he moved to Denver. And one evening we sat at supper with him and he tried to get my little girl, Grace, to imitate him. He was making all sorts of crazy faces and doing wild gestures and just being silly. And Grace just stared at him and stared at him. And then she looked over at me as if to say, what is he doing? Well, I ran a quick test. I started doing the same thing that my brother was doing, making crazy faces and gestures. And after just a few seconds, Grace started making crazy faces and doing the gestures. She looked at my brother, whom she doesn't have the same relationship with and doesn't know his kind disposition toward her, and was a little bit nervous about imitating him. But when Daddy did it, it was OK. She knows me. She has a relationship with me. The passage then addresses us and says, if God has forgiven you, if he has forgiven you, if you really are a child of his, why shouldn't you imitate him? He loves you. He ministers to you. He is not doing anything in your life right now to injure you, to harm you, to hurt you, destroy you, to make life miserable for you. Remember that he is the author of all good things. He is the one who created pleasure. Satan merely counterfeits pleasure. If God has this kind of disposition toward you, imitate him. This is a good ground or reason for imitation. Second, we imitate God because God commands it. We use an imperative here in this verse. Therefore, be imitators of God. Do this, God says. So there's a basis of a relationship. There's also a basis of authority where God has legislated or commanded that all you who have really believed in him must imitate himself. If imitation always has a ground or reason, you should imitate things that have a good ground or good reason. Ask yourself this question. Why are you imitating? Why are you imitating today? If I had the time to look carefully enough at your clothing, even, I could tell whom you are imitating to some extent. Why are you imitating a certain person of the world? Why are you imitating these styles, the fashions, the fads of this world? And this is not a message on fashion and fads. Okay, it's a message on imitation. Nonetheless, we should at least think, why do I choose to exalt this person as worthy of imitation? Why, when I walk down the mall, do I see this particular store and say, oh, I just have to look like that? What in that is so important that makes it worthy of imitation? You might want to ask yourself, does the world really care for you? Do the stars who are out there who have their own clothing lines care whether you live or even die? Do they care whether your life is miserable? Have they somehow improved your life, given you pleasure in some real, long-lasting fashion? Do they care about you at all? But you'll imitate them. Do they have any authority at all? But you'll imitate them. And yet we have a God who loves us very deeply, very carefully, and who does have authority to command us. And we walk aside from imitating him instead of following after the Lord as dear children. Well, this still does not fully answer our need. It's good to know the reason for imitation, but you need to also understand the object of imitation. People do not generally imitate things. They imitate other people, other than when you're doing some game like charades. But generally speaking, we try to look like and act like other people. I had some students in the first years that I was teaching who came up to me after teaching and said, you are exactly like your dad. You teach like him. Your gestures are like him. Your vocal inflections. You go up and down in your vocal range like him. You are just like your dad. We imitate people. So whom are we to imitate? Well, that's simple enough in this passage. Be imitators or followers of God as beloved children. I had a high school chemistry teacher who was an excellent teacher. His name was Mr. Wetzel. He was brilliant. He was brilliant in his field of teaching. That is, he knew the material chemistry very well, but he also knew how to communicate chemistry exceptionally. We loved class. We looked forward to going to chemistry as hard as it was. We all enjoyed it, even people that didn't do quite as well in the class. It was fun. I got to college, however, and took general chemistry here on campus with Dr. Vogt. All of a sudden I went, oh, so that's where that illustration came from. Oh, now I get it. That's where the mannerism came from. See, Mr. Wetzel had studied enough and was around Dr. Vogt enough to take on some of the mannerisms of Dr. Vogt. He imitated a person. But why would he imitate Dr. Vogt? He would imitate this man because he respects him. He looks up to him. He realizes that he is worthy of imitation. And I have told Dr. Vogt himself by no means derogatory, said, you know, you remind me of a cross between Albert Einstein and Jerry Lewis. You're absolutely brilliant and profound. He has been hired by major corporations and even the government in America to carry on scientific research. And yet at the same time, he is so much fun, worthy of imitation. And therefore, my high school chemistry teacher imitated him. You also must imitate through the right means. The call for imitation here is qualified by an expression, beloved or dear children. You're a child of God if you believed in him. So you imitate as a child would imitate. I do not want my children to imitate me or even make the attempt by running aside and doing things that I disapprove of. That's not imitation. They have to look like me and heed my instruction and follow me if they really are imitating me. And this passage goes on to address a series of sins that basically, logically speaking, they say, walk in love, but don't look like this. Why shouldn't you look like this? Why shouldn't you have filthiness in your life? Defilement in general, defilement in your speech, defilement in everything that you do. Why don't you look like that? Because that's not imitating God. So we imitate God through the right means. We imitate by knowing. The passage uses the phrase just as several times. Well, in order to imitate someone, you must know them. I once walked up to a friend of mine and said, imitate me. And this guy had known me for years. And he said, imitate me. And he kind of looked at me strangely and said, I don't think I can. I haven't observed you that closely. I said, oh, come on, you can imitate me. And he tried to do a few things and they were very comical. I said, even my one-year-old can imitate me. Why can't you? Depth of knowledge. Depth of knowledge. You know, I think some of the times we have difficulty in imitating God because we don't know him. We simply don't know him. We don't really understand his character. We don't study it out and consciously try to be like that. Hold in your mind, just for a minute, one moral characteristic of God. Faithfulness, for example. Faithfulness. Is God's faithfulness worthy of imitation? I mean, is faithfulness a good thing or a bad thing? Of course it's a good thing. Now, what does faithfulness mean? It means that when God has set his mind on something and has chosen something, he's absolutely committed to it. When he has chosen a people, he is committed to those people. He will keep his promises to them, even at great cost to himself, as Christ demonstrated through his death. That God is not a changeful individual. James reflects on this. There is no shadow of shifting, as if the sun were to move and cast a different length of shadow. God's attitudes do not change like that. His personality does not change. He's perfectly faithful. It's worthy of imitation, but we have to consider it and think on it carefully before we can do it, before we can practice it. We imitate by knowing. Second, we imitate by loving. The passage tells us to walk in love. That's a command directed at your attitude toward God. Christ loved us and proved it. Now love him and love each other. You imitate by living. Again, verse 5 connects the list of sins with the preceding thought. The person who lives a life in sin is a life that does not imitate the holiness of God. He's quite the opposite. He stands apart from the inheritance. And note this very clearly. What does the passage show you? It says that no person of these character qualities who are permeated by these sins has any part in inheritance. But children do have a part in inheritance. That means the scripture passage assumes that children will indeed imitate their father. They will end up looking like him. That's true in this life. For better or for worse, my children imitate me. Sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes you see them with a dedication of character, a devotedness to, I must do this task and do it well. I can't just throw something together. It's got to be done exactly right. Problem is, that's also a deficit when Grace can't finish her coloring pages because she's taking so long to make sure she's exactly in the lines or something like that. There's a fastidiousness of character that she's also imitating that can be a deficit. But there is nothing in God's character that is a deficit. You can imitate him wholly, perfectly, and purely without sin. And if you are a child of God, truly a child, you must imitate him. There is no alternative. Imitation is an active choice, however. You do not imitate by sitting there unchanged. You imitate by choosing to do so. A number of years ago, shortly after SeaWorld was opened in Florida, I had the opportunity to visit. In one particular show, we sat down in front of a huge tank with killer whales in it. And we were one of the early people into the show, so we watched as other people were slowly filtering in. And they had a mime sitting down there. You didn't know it when you first walked in because he was just sitting there, you know, dressed fairly normally like everyone else and watching the things going on in the tank. But when he would see somebody who would walk by with a particular characteristic, he would start imitating it. A person would walk by with kind of a strange gait, and there would go the mime walking with a strange gait. Or some person would walk by you know, kind of a little bit odd, maybe in their appearance, and we would consider, and he was looking like this, and the mime would immediately start. Of course, everyone up there in the stands is absolutely roaring. And the person down front is a little bit nervous with what's going on. And he would turn around, and then the mime would be pointing off in another direction, you know, pretending that he wasn't imitating anything. But he was imitating based on an observation, and based on intention. There was a purpose in the imitation. And so is the call of the passage before us today. Therefore, as beloved children, be followers of God. If you really are one of His, be a follower of Him. Several years ago, I began reading one of Grace's favorite books. When she pointed to the book and pointed to our favorite reading chair and kept pointing back and forth, and, okay, I get the picture. It was before she could read. And we sat down together and started reading. We got to a particular page, and I began reading, "Waddle, waddle, waddle, the little ducklings go, waddling after mother duck, seven in a row." And as soon as the words came out of my mouth, Grace started going, waddling her head back and forth. I thought, well, this is a little bit strange. How did she know how to do that? So I turned back to the preceding page. And then I flipped to the page with the number 7 on it, and she started waddling immediately again. And back and forth. So I experimented for a while. I thought, how in the world did she learn how to do that? Well, later, I saw my wife reading the book to Grace. And as they got to each individual animal, my wife would help convey what an animal does by some kind of physical demonstration. The little lambs skipping in the, frolicking the meadow. And they'd get to number 7. Waddle, waddle, waddle. The little ducklings go. And Grace, even as less than a 2-year-old, could pick up on it and imitate it perfectly. Perfectly. That ought to be characteristic of our life. With relationship to the moral character of God. The Lord calls us today from this passage and encourages us. You must be my imitator. Father, we're thankful for the time and the word that you've given to us. Help us to dwell on your character today. May we shunt aside everything that is defiling, everything that does not coincide perfectly with your own character. May we observe you carefully on the basis of the work that you have already done and the grace that you have already shown. May we learn to love you, and in the process of loving you and watching you, may we be like you.
You've been listening to The Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker was Dr. Brian Hand, professor of Bible at BJU. For a cassette or compact disc copy of today's message, send a check for $6 to Campus Store, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, 29614. Be sure to mention the name of the speaker and today's date. The Chapel Hour has been sponsored by Bob Jones University.